This week's episode of The Boundless Show is sponsored by the book Love Thy Body. If you find yourself struggling to find real answers to hard questions about topics like abortion, homosexuality, and gender, you'll realize that this is a world that celebrates secularism and portrays Christianity as harsh and bigoted. It's harder than ever these days to share the truth in love. But Nancy Piercy's new book, it's called Love Thy Body, is going to empower you to respond to today's headline issues intelligently and compassionately. Love Thy Body is available now wherever books and ebooks are sold.
Boundless Show.
If singleness is just about marriage, then Jesus and the Apostle Paul failed. And I don't know that I'm willing to say that Jesus failed in life. I think he did a good job. So I'm like, so singleness can't just be about getting married.
Well, that was Ben Stewart, the author of Single, Dating, Engaged, Married. We're going to hear from him a little bit later in our culture segment. We also will be answering an inbox question from a listener who's feeling awkward at her new job. Who among us has not been there? Joshua Rogers has, so he's going to weigh in with some advice for her. All right, well, here we are for our roundtable. This is a fun one today, and it may get a little combative. I'm okay with that because I'm kind of a fan, and we're in a new year, so it's all good. I have got Loanne, John, and Jake here. Hey, guys.
Hey.
What'd it be?
We are going to talk, for those of you who follow us on social, you knew this one was coming up because Catherine put it out there that we were going to talk about coffee. Okay, this is like talking...
The devil's
John's like,
so yeah, excited.
The devil's brew. This is like talking about politics or religion, except, I don't know, it's just coffee. It's
so,
often,
so much more enjoyable.
Just as heatedly debated as these other topics. Okay?
This is actually important. So.
Well, and this is funny because we're not just talking about coffee, okay, because we all have our opinions. Those of us, you know, it's either you're a coffee drinker or you're not. And then if you're a coffee drinker, you either like quality coffee or you're a quantity coffee drinker or you're a social coffee drinker or whatever. I think we have all ilks here at the table. So this is going to be a fun one to discuss. And so I kind of want to put it out there for us to just kind of give our little coffee stances, our coffee manifestos, if you will, and kind of tell where we stand. Because I think this is, I mean, there are people out there that the minute the new iPhone comes out, they're there, they're buying it, even though they just bought an iPhone 4 months prior. I know people like this, okay? There are people out there who are all about, you know, shoes, and they're going to drop $700 on a pair of shoes, you guys, that it exists. This is for real, okay? Or something. And coffee is kind of one of those things that people, for those who drink it every day and those who drink it in a certain way, that rhymes, y'all, it's
so cool,
it's a big deal. So let me start right here to my right with Jake. Who we all know a lot about Jake. He's actually here with a Nalgene bottle of water, so I'm questioning his coffee consumption in general. But what's the deal?
Well, you should be, because I'm incredibly casual. There's a term in the gaming world called dirty, filthy casual. It's a derogatory term about those that kind of immerse themselves but don't really care. They're just there, you know, because they want to annoy everyone who really likes the thing.
Okay.
And so that's where I am with coffee. I'm definitely a dirty, filthy casual. I will have a couple of cups a week with a lot of creamer. I'm kind of unashamed to say that I generally just like a little bit of coffee mixed in with my creamer. That's okay. My general stance with coffee. Okay. I enjoy having that, but that's about it for me.
Okay, so what you just said, creamer, not
creamer.
Cream. So are you talking about like flavored?
I'm talking about like yeah,
not
Irish cream.
Real
yeah.
Product. Okay, so not dairy. Okay.
Do I have to specify that I mean non-alcoholic Irish cream?
Yeah.
Okay, well, you already have John scowling over there. So, John, give us your.
I like it both.
What are you going to tell us?
So, I will generally refer to myself as a coffee snob.
Okay.
I absolutely love coffee. I'm not ashamed to spend like $20 on a bag of coffee, or I've spent like on a single cup of coffee, I've spent over like $12 on a single cup before.
Oh, wow.
And it was absolutely amazing. No, it was so cool.
Sure? That wasn't like coffee in a movie?
Because it was specially grown in this like lab off the coast of Costa Rica
coffee
or something.
Grown in a lab.
And then they like forgot about it for 30 years and they found it again and then they regrew it and it was amazing. It was coolest cup of coffee I've ever had.
Okay.
I thought cold
crazy.
Coffee was
that's
bad
like you're paying for
you
the experience.
It.
You're almost paying for an experience right
yeah.
there.
Yeah, definitely. Like, it is an experience.
They should have Groupons for that. Like you just get a, you buy your Groupon to have a, exactly. drink a cup of
no,
coffee
like
it, that's
it's
from
an
some
experience,
hillside.
And I love it. It's so, it's fun. And it's more of a hobby.
Doesn't
for me
that make
than
it more
anything,
like McDonald's though? Because you can leave
no.
McDonald's for 30 years and
no,
eat it and it'd be amazing.
Regrew it. It's,
okay. So, I mean, basically you're saying yeah. coffee equals supersize me.
No,
okay, so talk about like frequency and like what, so what are you doing? And what, are you like brewing coffee? Are you doing pour overs? What's your methodology?
Yeah. So I'll normally do a pour over. I've got a Chemex and a Kalita, so I'll normally do like a Kalita in the mornings because it's really quick.
Word.
That sounds like medical equipment.
Yeah, it is.
Okay.
Pretty much.
This literally sounds medicinal.
No, but it's, so like I'll just have like one cup a day, just more for the taste than for the caffeine.
Okay.
And then on weekends I'll do like a big Chemex, or I'll do like an AeroPress, which is also really fun. Or if I can get my hands on a siphon, those are always really fun too.
What about the nitro cold brew, bro?
All right, Loanne, give us the opposite end of the spectrum here, because I know kind of where you are.
Loanne is about
first
to blow
of all,
the
he
top.
Was just speaking all Greek to me.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can teach you. Yeah, I can teach you the ways.
There's nothing I need to learn.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love the smell of coffee. Absolutely. You know, if we're in the store at the grocery, I love going down the row and I love just to inhale it. If it would only taste like it smells.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, it falls beyond short in that regard for me. I've tried it a few times through the years. You know, my mom one time, she's like, oh, this is a caramel whatever, who knows? And she's like, you can't even taste the coffee. Okay, mama. It took everything to do that swallow. It is a gag reflex for me. It's not that I just don't like it. It literally makes me ill. I don't care if it's in coffee. If the coffee and coffee, you can do that. You
coffee
can
on
do
coffee,
that.
That's so
it's called
meta.
A red eye.
You know, if it's
sounds
in
like
cakes,
that's a real thing.
Cookies, candy, whatever.
Yeah.
If there's a coffee flavor in it, it's not going in here.
Okay. So I want to talk, I just want to like open this wound a little bit here because I want to talk about how.
John's wound.
Because everyone's allowed to have their preferences and everyone's allowed, you know, like I have said many times on the show that I will drop money on experiences. I will do a good vacation. I will do whatever. So almost, I want to get into the money aspect of it in a little bit, but let's talk just about how generally socially accepted it is to just be about coffee for everything. There is coffee hour at church. You go out and do coffee with someone. It is like, you know, it's kind of like become the new church potluck where they always said the Baptists always had to have some kind of casserole at everything. Now it's like coffee. You just have to have coffee. You're doing coffee with people. And it involves going out. Like for some people, you know, we've had some of our listeners respond and say, yeah, I don't normally drink coffee, but I go to a Starbucks or whatever and drop $5-6 on a latte because I'm meeting a friend. So there's this like obligatory nature of I've got to spend money on doing this because it's the thing to do. And this idea that, yeah, you're going to go and you're going to find great beans or you're going to have people over for coffee or you're going to serve coffee with XYZ. What are your feelings around that? Like, I mean, is it okay? I mean, have we reached kind of in the church and in our culture this coffee weird idolatry kind of thing where it's all about coffee all the time?
Well, I mean, that's on an individual basis. Some people worship coffee. Not going to mention names.
John.
I have a special table. It's not a shrine. It's different. It's
oh, my word.
He's got to keep it that way so the beans don't dry out. It's okay.
No, it's just
or are they
nice
supposed to dry out? I don't know.
No, you don't want that. They're already dried.
All right. They're already dried out. No, I mean, it absolutely can be, but just like anything else can be. I don't know that having the – it's good to have something that we can all gather around. It used to be the water cooler after the Pope – you know, it was actually Pope Clement that baptized some beans to make coffee okay for Christians. Pope Clement the VIII, for those that want to look it up. It's nice to have something to gather around. And if that's something that people like to gather around, I don't fault them for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, kind of like you're saying, like it can definitely be a problem. But as long as the meeting together is the point, and it just so happens to be over coffee, like you can meet together over like, go out and, you know, like play Ultimate, or you can go like you're saying, have a casserole. But if that's something you guys both enjoy, I love casseroles too. I'm not knocking casseroles.
Yeah.
But if that's something you guys both genuinely enjoy and it's like, hey, this is something special. We're going to sit down. We're going to just talk and drink some coffee or like meet up and brew some coffee and we'll talk while we brew it. And we'll like talk about the coffee, but also just about life and what's going on. I think that's more important that it's the social aspect rather than the fact that we have to be doing it over coffee.
Yeah. I kind of feel like I have two problems with the coffee thing. And I'm actually I'm a coffee drinker. I drink it every day. I'm a volume drinker. So the fact that John drinks one cup a day is just mind-boggling to me. I drink probably like a half a pot in the morning. And so I see, like, inherently, and I don't even feel like the caffeine. So I don't know if that, but I will get a withdrawal headache. Okay. So now I have problems with that. The fact that there's almost a dependency issue. That's one of my problems. These people that are like, I can't even go to my morning meeting without my coffee. Okay. Really? So that's problematic. And then the other thing is I had one of my good friends worked at Starbucks in Seattle for a long time. And there were people there that came in and bought, they came in three times a day and bought specialty drinks. So now you're talking like heading towards $20 a day on a coffee habit, some of whom I have friends who do that and they can't make their rent. Okay. So all of a sudden it becomes this priority of just, I don't know if it's keeping up with the Joneses or what that is. And obviously you can do coffee cheaper than that. So I don't know. What are thoughts on that about, I mean, do you need to sit down and confront a friend on a coffee habit? Like what would that
look
like?
Well, if they can't pay their rent, for sure. Just like, if, like, cause if it was drugs.
I want to see you do that, Jake.
Or if it was like anything.
What's
like
that?
Shopping.
I want to see you do that.
I'm like, bring me along. Let's talk to your friends. Like, hey, Lisa's friend. I know you don't know me, but this coffee thing has got to stop.
Okay.
She's not going to take you
in. No more coffee.
I'll hook you guys up.
Exactly.
But at the, but yeah, if it's a problem, if it's an addictive behavior, if we've turned it into that idol that prevents us from being able to live life, we would do that for our friends if it was drugs or alcohol or any like.
But what, I don't think we do. That's the problem. I think we totally just legitimize weirdo habits, including coffee, because it's.
Maybe coffee.
You know,
But. But if they can't pay their rent, is that legit? Like, who's legitimizing that?
Well, they probably wouldn't tell you. I found that out.
Oh, gotcha. You had to, oh, it was Lisa snooping around.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, I just happened to hack into your bank account. And noticed you couldn't pay your rent this month.
Exactly.
Yeah. I feel like that's more just poor money management and putting it into the wrong things than necessarily blaming coffee. But like Jake was saying, like, that can happen with anything. And
like,
just about
look,
anything
I've missed
can be
rent
like
a couple months because of Doritos.
Yeah, exactly. Jake has a Doritos problem. But
I haven't missed rent.
Okay, good. But yeah, like any behavior can be addicting, whether it's like shopping or social media or like coffee can be that way. But it's not that thing's problem. Like if you realize that that's something that you have a problem with, definitely like don't do that. Like cut it off. Like if one hand causes you to sin, cut it off, you know? And so like if coffee causes you to sin and miss rent, like stop drinking coffee. Like it's tough for about a week and then you're fine.
Yeah. Luann, did the whole coffee craze just kind of hit you? I mean, I'm assuming that, you know, I mean, I'm not saying you're old.
But thank you.
I'm assuming that, I mean, I remember when I was small, people drank like Folgers coffee.
Yeah.
Okay, that was, you just opened up that can.
8 o'clock.
And that was it. You know, and it wasn't, people didn't probably even know what good coffee was, okay, in this country. So what, I mean, what would you say, what's been most irritating to you about seeing this obsession with coffee among your people that come in with the drink trays and have everyone's little specialty?
You know.
What about my love for coffee irritates you?
I mean, on the one hand, I could be my little judgy self and be like, oh my word, I just don't understand. I just don't get it. You guys are just crazy or whatever. But I'm a food snob. So if you want to talk, you know, cooking and recipes and all that, let's have a throwdown.
Okay.
You know. But some of my kids love coffee. Some of them don't. My sons-in-law love their coffee, and they would give John a run for his money.
Okay.
You know, and there are times that I am like, you just spend how much on coffee? You know, it just boggles my mind. I mean, now I love tea.
Like my dad was like, it's flavored water.
Yeah.
Like that was his whole thing.
You know, tea is my thing. I absolutely love tea. All
also flavored water.
Well, it depends on how
soda
strong
pop.
You make it.
Flavored
just
water.
But
alcohol,
you know,
flavored water.
Yeah. I'll go to, you know, whether it be a Starbucks or whatever, maybe three times a year at most.
Yeah.
And I'll think, do I really want to spend the money to get a chai tea? Now I'll go to the grocery store and I'll buy and do this and that and the other. You know, it's just, to me, I do see that, you know, the expense of it all. And if it's expendable income you have, fine. But like they were saying, when it, you know, you're spending money that you got to really stop and think, okay, what am I exchanging for this?
Okay.
One reason why I justify spending as much as I do on coffee is because like the place that I buy from, then they tell you about the farmers who grew the coffee. And these are generally farmers in like third world countries where like making a living is really difficult. And so knowing that these places actually will support those farmers in those places. I was reading an article about in Costa Rica, I believe it was, they were having like a problem where they weren't paying the farmers as much as they needed to, like, actually make the coffee. So a bunch of them switched to growing, like, cocaine and other drugs and illegal substances, and it just snowballed to being this, like, really big problem in the country. And that was just because people wanted cheap coffee. So, like, I'm not saying don't buy Folgers, but know why you're spending what you're spending, kind of where it's going to, you know?
Coffee is missions.
Yeah, exactly. And I actually know a lot of people who do that. Like, they help local coffee farmers, and they're in the countries. Like, they're in Honduras or Guatemala or all over, and they're working with the coffee farmers and giving them jobs, but also sharing the gospel with them.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it sounds, I mean, I think, again, it's one of those things where if it's kind of a hobby, like, mm-hmm. I think you spend a certain amount of time, like, finding the right beans, right, John? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's kind of a thing for you to, like, know the difference. I don't know, like, sometimes I'll know when I brew coffee, I'm like, oh, I like this one or I don't like this one, but I can't, like, determine notes in it and all that kind of stuff. But I know when I've had a good cup of coffee, generally. Mm-hmm. But I think it can be. It can be a fun hobby or something like that. I think it's more just concerned. Well, I mean, Jake, you kind of brought up, like, your thing with Doritos.
Yeah.
What are you doing with Doritos that people think is what? Do you always have a... It's the salsa verde, right?
I mean, I love all Doritos. Okay. I do not discriminate against any of them. But salsa verde Doritos are, like, my jam. If you ask me my favorite food of any type of food, it's salsa verde Doritos.
But it's like, do you always have them in your house?
I don't, actually.
Okay.
I kind of make a conscious effort just because... Well, you know what? Primarily because I have a wife who loves me and is trying to keep me alive. Or else I probably would always have them in my house.
Can't have them for every meal. Okay.
She's like, you can't eat them all the time. But it is the type of thing that I do have to look at. Am I going to these things for a fix? Am I going to these things to avoid, you know, like, mm-hmm. because oftentimes I found this with Doritos. I've had a bad day. I've had a rough day. I just needed myself a nice bag of Doritos. Mm-hmm. And I'm finding my comfort mm-hmm. in this mm-hmm. thing. And I think we do the same with coffee or mm-hmm. with ice cream mm-hmm. or with Netflix binges.
Yeah.
It's not
yeah.
the items themselves. It's what we're turning to instead of God
right.
that mm-hmm. we have to be the most careful of. Because right. these things are a lot easier to turn to,
yeah.
frankly.
Well, or being, okay, and you clearly cannot do this with Doritos, I'm not going to argue that, but this idea of it being a status symbol, like to be able to talk about the best, I mean, just
Doritos
to know,
are super
if you're into beans
status.
Because you're into beans, then cool. I mean, coffee beans and stuff like that. That is fine. But again, I think there's this weird obligation of people feeling like, oh, I want to be cool. I want to impress other people by knowing the difference between an AeroPress and a pour over and a whatever the things were John even talked about. Haven't heard of those.
But, that's great.
Yeah, there you go. You know, almost like a snobbery, a bad kind of snobbery to it. Like it's a special club that you're not going to invite other people into and stuff. or you're going to turn your nose up at the coffee that people serve, you know, in their homes or whatever.
Do you do that, John?
No, I don't.
Good.
If I'm at someone's house and they're serving me like Folgers, I'll drink it.
I will serve you K-cups. Okay.
Yeah.
You will?
And I'll take it because you're being hospitable.
No, you know? Catherine uses the pods and John has been very judgy.
Oh, yeah. I've made fun of Catherine a lot for that.
Because there's such good coffee in Colorado
at Jake's
Springs.
House,
that's like coffee Catherine hot dogs where they take like just all the fillings and mash them up and put them in a pod.
It's
like
so
all
bad.
Those entrails and stuff. Anyway, no, that's all kinds of
that's
crazy.
That's the great thing about Doritos, though. They're made to be shared with everyone.
Well, so is coffee.
You can't share a cup of coffee.
Yeah,
that's just for you.
It's called a cupping. You go to a cupping. They're so good. Oh, you get to try a bunch of different kinds.
A cupping.
It's kind of like a wine tasting, but for coffee. It's
isn't
so much fun.
Therapy.
No, I was going to say, isn't that the thing where they do like candles and they like suck black holes into your skin?
No, they put a bunch of different coffees like around and like they put the grounds on top of the water and you just like scoop it off, go in with a spoon and just kind of slurp it. And sometimes you'll spit it back out just to get the taste. It's so fun.
I would always spit it back out.
That sounds like a dubious social occasion.
Okay.
Yeah, so we just go and spit coffee at each other.
Let's talk, as we finish up here, let's just talk briefly. One, practicals about coffee, if it's, and John's not even going to like identify with this. If it's a problem in your life, practicals about that. But let's apply it then across the board because coffee is going to be it for some people. You know, other foods or other things are going to be mm-hmm. it for other people. Mm-hmm. What are the practicals? Jake, you said you keep yourself in check on the Doritos. You have to. I mean.
Yeah, I just don't. I can't keep them around all the time. I have to be selective about when I enjoy them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think for me, it has definitely come down to I think I need to cut down on the amount of coffee I drink. For me, it is a completely social thing to be in a meeting, to be hanging out with friends and have a cup of coffee. It's almost like the cigarettes of the new millennium. You know, it's weird. It's like a weird social thing.
As long as you get your cup of coffee and your piece of avocado toast in the other hand.
Something like that. All right.
Yeah. And I think we talked a little bit about like the money aspect of it.
Yeah.
Like as the biggest thing is to make sure like don't drop $20 a day on coffee. That's ridiculous. Like, I have a line item in my budget that is coffee, and like, I think it's about $60 a month, and I normally try to go under that. But I've factored that in with all the other things, like paying rent is the most important.
And it means that you're not spending money on other things.
So recognizing that. And so if you really want something else, then cut that back and be okay with cutting back to maybe one cup a day or a cup every other day, or like start drinking in the afternoon. Like, I've tried to start doing that a little bit more, because then it's not the thing that's waking you up. It's just something that you actually enjoy, you know?
Okay.
Well, and I think even, you know, for me, I don't like the coffee, but for those of us that don't yet are surrounded by those that do, I think we have to keep our sense of humor in check about it and not be offended. I mean, I have someone that I've known for years that loves to remind me how defective I am because I don't like coffee. But that's okay, because their favorite place to go, I've dubbed it the crack house, because they just love going there and they just can't get enough. Mm-hmm. And I've even indulged them and bought coffee from there for them. But, you know, just keep your sense of humor about it and realize, okay, it's all right. You know, if you like it and I don't, that's okay. We can still mostly be friends.
Yeah. Okay. Well, and when you do go to that little coffee hour at church, actually talk to people. Don't just be about, like, I'm getting my coffee and then I'm going to sit down and just do my thing. You know, use it for what it's supposed to be for.
And if you don't like coffee, there's tea, there's hot chocolate, there's cider. Just drink some water or something. Like, there's smoothies at most coffee shops. Like,
Doritos.
Still engage. Yeah. Just bring a bag of Doritos and engage with people while you're eating them. You know, like,
you will be the life of every coffee party if you bring Doritos.
But they don't pair well together. You're going to get this weird, like, salty, spicy.
You are sadly mistaken. You can dip Doritos in coffee.
That is going to ruin the coffee so much.
Here's one thing I will not let you do, and that is spend $7 on that minuscule bag of almonds, like at a Starbucks or something. Like all those little snacky things. No. Stay away, people, because I will start judging you on that. Or the $12 cake pops or something.
Cake pops are good. I do love
they
cake
are very
pops,
good.
But they're overpriced.
Yeah, they're super overpriced.
Sandwiches at Starbucks are just microwaved.
Learn to make them on your own, people. Invite some friends over and have a time of fellowship
over cake pops. Ain't no party like a cake pop party, because a cake pop party don't stop.
All right. Thanks, you guys. Thanks for being honest.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm a troublemaker. I've come to speak my mind. Born to be a rebel. The rebel of a holy kind. I won't raise my fist in anger, but I lift my hands and pray.
Well, folks, we are here today with a new friend to The Boundless Show. I love it when I can introduce you to someone new, although maybe some of you know him because he's kind of, you know, big stuff. We've talked a lot about Passion City Church here at The Boundless Show and Louie and others there who have been involved with great ministry, especially to young adults. I think we can often feel forgotten, but the team there really does a great job of giving validity and hope to a young adult single audience, and Ben Stewart is no exception. He is the author, actually, of Single, Dating, Engaged, Married, Navigating Life and Love in the Modern Age. He just covers it all in this book. So, Ben, welcome to The Boundless Show.
Well, thanks, Lisa. It's great to be here.
Well, very fun to have you. In addition to serving on the team at Passion City Church, which is in Atlanta, he's also on the board of directors for Breakaway Ministries, which is a weekly Bible study at Texas A&M. Now, don't email us with all your rivalry weirdness, people. Okay, we don't want to hear about the rival schools and whatever. Good times.
We already know it's the best.
Exactly. So, but very fun. And you live actually in Atlanta with your wife and three kids. And so you've kind of walked the gamut of these seasons. And so it's kind of fun to have someone who's married now with kids look back on these seasons and kind of, I know you've been said to have a lot of experience. In fact, I think even Craig Rochelle said, you know, there's not too many other people that he knows that has tread the world of young adults as much as you have. So being so young yourself, of course, you know, you're so
right.
Yeah,
yes.
Exactly. So, well, good. Well, we're going to actually talk about singleness this week. And then next week, we're going to tread into the dating space because you walk through kind of these in the book as actual life stages and different challenges and different opportunities with both. So I want to kind of kick it off. You actually refer when you're talking to singleness in the book, you refer to it as a gift. And this is where, you know, all singles out there give the collective groan of like, seriously, right. Ben, let's not, it's easy for you to say you're married. You know, this is the right. gift that I want the gift receipt for and I want to return it. but you actually have a unique story involving your grandma that shows you that really there are some hidden benefits to embracing singleness and seeing even down the road how it can truly be a blessing. Can you share a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. I, you know, for me, growing up as a kid, had two grandmas, one in the country, one in the city. And country grandma's gifts were always weird, like a white sweater with a big deer on the front, stuff like that. And my city grandma would always give us, you know, actual toys as kids, things like that, except for one Christmas where country grandma gave me a slingshot that was like a titanium slingshot with a forearm grip for maximum leverage. The thing could break fence boards. It was unbelievable. And so we thought it was a Christmas miracle, country grandma actually getting it right. And we thought, if she's crushing it, city's going to take it to the next level. This is going to be the best Christmas ever. And I got to city grandma's house, and she gave us 100 shares of stock in a company. Which as an 8-year-old, we were less than blessed by that. And so the story I tell with that is, you know, years later, that slingshot, my brother ended up confiscating it and shooting pennies at me, which cut into my skin. And then the slingshot broke and cut my other arm. And this thing that was supposed to bring joy brought a lot of sadness, a lot of pain. But fast forward about 20 years later, when I was able to fulfill a lifelong dream of going to seminary, I showed up and there were guys doing everything they could to barely scrape together the money to pay for school. I mean, donating their plasma, and they're having to stand in bread lines and all this stuff to pay for seminary. And here I had 20 years of stock growth, and that stock from grandma paid for my education. So the point for me was, what we want is not always what's best for us. And what is best for us, we don't always appreciate. And it takes someone who's loving and wise to give us a gift that we may fail to appreciate at the time. And that's what I really came around in my own life with singleness. I was the last one of my friends to get married. And for me, coming into that single season, when I really realized this is a gift from God, and it's a gift with a purpose, when I got my mind clear on that, God's ordained the season for a reason, that transformed my single experience and really made it amazing. And so there's a lot of reasons I wrote this book, but one of them is because I wanted people to have the joy that I experienced as a single person when I really got the purpose of singleness straight in my view.
Yeah. Well, and it's so interesting because I think, you know, when you talk to most single adults, even single young adults, they view singleness as this season to like endure or rush through or get through or, you know, on their way to dating and engagement and marriage. And they kind of want to get out of it as quickly as possible, kind of like the 8-year-old who wants to be a teenager, you know. But you actually say in the book, you actually outline 8 things that you say while you were single kind of changed the trajectory of your single years. Can you just share with us a couple highlights from that, ones that you thought were really game changers in you kind of maximizing that season in your own life as you waited for what God had next?
Yeah. So for me, when I was in college, singleness was often presented as basically for preparation for marriage. That's what it's for. And I struggled with that personally because I thought, God hasn't guaranteed me a wife. Like, I may not get one. There's people that don't get married. And if singleness is just about marriage, then Jesus and the Apostle Paul failed. And I don't know that I'm willing to say that Jesus failed in life. I think he did a good job. So I'm like, so singleness can't just be about getting married. And so for me, that passage in 1 Corinthians where Paul calls singleness a gift, I wanted to understand that, and he says it's to pursue an undistracted devotion to the Lord. And when I read that, for me, that was so clarifying. By that time, I was out of college, in my 20s, living in a city, by myself, you know, and so trying to figure out how do I navigate this new work world. And it struck me, at the core of every human heart are the two desires for purpose and people, intimacy and impact. We want both. Everybody wants both. And when I talk to a lot of single people, there's that longing for intimacy, but with equal weight, there's a longing for impact or purpose or a cause of like, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just marking time. I'm just hanging with my friends and looking at my phone. Why am I here? And that why is what haunts them. And for me, when I got that why straight, this season has a purpose to pursue devotion to the Lord, not to pursue distraction, but devotion. That clarity was really a game changer for me. And then I started to see the benefits of singleness. You know, we tend to see the benefits of other stages and only see the downsides of our own stage. And what I'm trying to do in this is help people see the benefits of the stage they're in to maximize those. And being single, those benefits are freedom and time. You have them at a level that no other stage has. Children don't have the freedom single adults do. And older people or married people with kids don't have the time. I mean, I have three kids now under the age of six, and I was talking with a single friend not long ago, and she was asking me, have you seen this TV show? I said, no. Have you seen this show? No. Have you seen this show? No. And she said, how have you not seen all these shows? I said, I have three kids under the age of six. I said, I have 30 minutes of discretionary time every day with which to do what I choose.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I remember when I said that to her, she was like, I have hours. I said, yeah, exactly. So for me, when that got that in my view as a single person, I started to ask the question, how do I maximize these hours for the purpose God's given to me, to know him better than I've ever known him and to be a part of what he's doing in the world? And that made life fun. And that's the joy I want single people to experience.
Yeah. And I know in light of that idea of freedom and time, you know, and it's not that just single, you know, I think a lot of times when people say to us, oh, you know, you singles, all you have is a bunch of time and whatever, you know, it can be kind of like a salt in the wound of like, oh, we're just sitting around twiddling our thumbs. But the fact is we can choose to do with our time what we will. But give a couple practical examples, because I think I like how in the book you tell the story of the year you got married where that tsunami hit Thailand and you had a single friend who could pack his bags and just go to help and be part of that solution. But you realize that, oh, no, you had other priorities and stuff. But what about the person who, you know, just the everyday stuff? What would you say are a couple examples where you've seen singles in your church really be able to pour into something or be valuable, uniquely valuable in some kind of ministry or area of help that's just an everyday thing that they can do week to week? You know, it doesn't have to be, I think so many singles think, you know, if I'm not off starting an orphanage, then I'm not doing anything valuable. What can they do to really be?
I guess I should just be on my phone.
What can they do to really contribute in meaningful ways?
That's a great question. And I would say, for me, the first thing that came to my mind when I was single was, you know, I had grown up in a Christian home, but I realized I'd never really read the Bible, and certainly not all the way through. And I thought, I have the time to do that. And so I just decided I'm going to do that. And I would write out books of the Bible. And for me, a TV was distracting in my house for me. I got rid of my TV, which sounds crazy to people. But I'm like, if I exist to know God, this is a way I can do it. I'm going to do it. And so much good on how I see the world and myself came from prioritizing devotion to his word. A second thing I see is just getting connected with community. My wife is great at this. There is constantly an orbit of 20 and 30-year-old single women in her life. And they're not just babysitters, though some are, but they're just a part of our life. And you talk to several of them, and they go, I just like knowing I have a family that I can step into and have dinner with or step out of. And we love it because they're great people to have around our kids and have around us. And so there's a lot of deep emotional needs that can be met, if not romantically, just in healthy community. And then the other thing I would say is, yes, seeing the needs of the community around you. It's amazing for me, when I led Breakaway for 10 years, we decided, you know, we've got thousands of these students in this Bible study. Let's try to mobilize them. And again, being married and having kids, my time was getting limited. But we had five or six single people in their later 20s. And I said, I need y'all to find where the fabric of society is breaking and then help us figure out how we can be part of the solution. And one of them found a cause to help orphans, and the other one made some videos, and this person did a social media campaign. By the end of it, they were raising $250,000 a year to relieve human suffering. And I'm like, it's unbelievable. If you decide, I have this time and it can be leveraged, how much good can be done with the unique opportunities of being single? So I'm with you. I never want to downplay the ache of loneliness of being single, but I also, in that, don't want people to miss the incredible opportunity to make a difference. And there's so much need in our communities that if you have eyes to see it, you can be a part of some pretty special things in this season.
Yeah. Well, I think there's kind of this idea, this what you were talking about prompted this. The idea, you know, I've heard people or had people write to me and say, okay, Lisa, I mean, I could totally just rock out singleness as long as God would just tell me that someday I'm going to get married, as long as I know that there's that hope.
Yeah.
How can a single young adult best live in that tension, the balance between enjoying unmarried life, you know, really taking everything from it that we can, maximizing it, pouring into it, but also still remaining hopeful for marriage? Because I think sometimes it can seem interminable, like that. Like, should I just stop praying about it? Should I stop hoping? What if God's forgotten me? How do you live in kind of the now and the not yet?
Yeah, that's a great question, Lisa. I think the peace ultimately that we'll experience in that season is commensurate with the level of trust we have in the character of God. Because underneath that question of will I get married or not is the question, God, do you hear me? God, do you care about what I'm feeling? Do you see my life? Do I matter to you? It's a question of whether or not God cares about the longings of our heart. And the good news is, the Bible's filled with language about cast your anxiety on the Lord. Why? Because he cares for you. And so for me, there's seasons, and some of them were in singleness with this issue, but then always through life, there'll be these moments of going, is this an anxiety I'm feeling? Does God care about this? There's greater tragedies elsewhere in the world. Does he care about this thing that's causing me anxiety? And does he care about me? And so I would challenge people to start there, really do that hard soul work of, am I willing to cast this care on the Lord repeatedly? Because he told me to. And in that, am I fighting to believe that he really does care about me? And if this single season is lingering, he has purposes even if I can't see them. But I can trust his heart. I can trust he really loves me. So I would beg people to start there. And then to see, you know, not just the gift of you can make a big difference in the world, but really not miss out on the deep emotional satisfaction that can happen in getting involved in a community at a church. For me, when I was single, you know, I hung out with all single friends, which was great, but I watched a lot of them get married off. And over time at my church, I developed a friendship group that was single people, married people, young couples, people with kids, and a lot of my emotional needs were met in that community in a way I didn't expect. Or honestly, if you would have told me, I'd have been like, yeah, whatever, I'll handle you. But I was surprised at how comforting being a part of a community could be. And I would encourage people to not let the natural drift of the world push you towards isolation, but keep pressing into the community of God.
Yeah. So kind of as we wrap here, I want to ask you a question. I'm going to ask you the same question next week about dating. And that is, as you look back on your single years, your single season, what are two things that you would tell yourself then? What are two things you do differently that really you can kind of now kind of give the inside scoop on to those who are walking through that season right now? If you could change anything about your singleness and what you felt God was calling you to, maybe an opportunity you didn't take or something a mindset you would have differently, what would that look like?
Yeah, that's a great, I think about that sometimes. What would I tell the younger me?
Yeah.
And I would tell him, calm down, man. which is probably how direct I would need to be with a younger me. I might say it gentler to someone now, but I think for me, I could get so anxious about things. And we all know that anxiety really doesn't do any good. And it's taken me years of trying to live into Philippians 4, of letting my requests be made known to God, not being anxious about anything. And then he moves forward and says, and what's the most beautiful, lovely thing to think about? Think about that and do that. I just think if I would have earlier on developed that discipline that I developed later of writing out all my anxieties on a piece of paper and going, God, here they are, and I trust you with those. Now let me take up the most beautiful, noble, excellent way of interacting. I probably would have had less health issues in my 20s.
that's
good. Would be the first one.
That's good advice. Yeah.
And then, yeah, that's my heartbeat there. And then second, just at a shallow level, I probably would have traveled more, you know, gone to Europe a few more times or something.
What, you mean you can't just pack those three kids up and bring them on over there anytime?
Man!
No, okay.
It's an exponential level of hassle. I cannot communicate how difficult it is to travel with three little monkeys.
Yeah.
So pray for us every time we do that, please.
Sounds good. Well, folks, we've been talking to Ben Stewart here. His book is Single, Dating, Engaged, Married, Navigating Life and Love in the Modern Age, and you will hear from him again next week, because we've been talking about singleness this week. We're going to talk about dating next week. So whether you are dating now or not, this is great advice. Look forward to next week. Make sure you put it on your calendar to check out the show then. But Ben, we're looking forward to having you back. Thanks so much for really infusing, again, wisdom and compassion into this topic for young adults who are a few steps behind you, but are in a place that you have been. And so encouragement is super helpful on that front. Thanks so much.
You're welcome, Lisa. Thank you. I don't know where the valley ends, but the road is paved with mercy. And I can see how the river bends, 'cause its waters flow straight through me. Nothing ever looked like this. The wonder of a world I miss. The clarity I find in grace. I never thought I'd see this way. You've been here every time I fall. Been there through it all. All this time.
Well, hey, everyone. We are finishing out the show, and we have Joshua Rogers here to answer this week's inbox question. Hey, Joshua.
Hey, Lisa.
Hey. Okay. Well, we usually throw relationship questions at you, but we have a job-related one this time. So from your years of struggling in the workplace with coworkers.
Wait, what are you talking about? I'm doing fine, Lisa.
Oh, no, I mean not now. I mean, you know, of course, in the distant past. In the distant past.
Of course.
Yeah.
Far distant.
You're going to help this listener. They say, I recently started a new job and can't get over how awkward I feel. I know it sounds dumb and most people seem nice, but I have this nagging feeling in the back of my mind that I'm annoying and not following the right office social norms, if that makes any sense. How can I, one, get over this fear, and two, make sure that I'm actually being a good coworker? Well, this is a good question, actually, because, I mean, who doesn't want to start off on the right foot? So I hope you have some good advice here, Joshua.
Yeah, this is such a good question. This is definitely one of my favorite questions we've ever gotten before, because this is legit. You know, we need to think about this. And first of all, let me just say, I was thinking about this weekend. I was thinking through some of my insecurities, and I was like, you know, my insecurities are different at 39 than they were at 29. But insecurity just goes with the territory of being a human being. And so first of all, I'd say, you know what, give yourself a break. You're insecure, I'm insecure, everybody's insecure in some context. So, you know, to address your questions, though, in a workplace, you know, how do you get over the fear? First of all, you need to recognize that everyone in your office, you know, even the ones who've been there for a long time, have some level of insecurity about their workplace. It just happens. It might be some supervisor. It may be because they're on the ropes. You never know. But in addition to being generally insecure, people tend to have some kind of insecurity in their workplace. there's also a great quote I heard from a mentor one time, and she said, if you're concerned about what others are thinking about you, don't worry, they're not. Listen, nobody cares. They are not thinking about you. They're thinking about their credit card debt. They're thinking about the fact that they're pregnant and nobody knows it. They're thinking about how tired they are. Look, fear, the fear that you're feeling, it comes from a sense of a threat. And there is no real threat here. Just do your job. So the second part of your question was, how can I be a good coworker? You know what? The most important thing, do your job, do your job, do your job. They hired you to come there and do some work. They didn't hire you to come and make friends. I am not saying that you shouldn't be friendly, but don't try so hard to make friends. Let those things slowly develop as you work together with people, because what I find is when people come and they really try to make friends, they just kind of look desperate. There's an established norm in the office of friendships, and you've got to ease your way into that. So just kind of keep your head low, be kind, work hard. Listen, you're royalty. Scripture describes you as royalty. We're a holy priesthood, kings and queens. And just live like it. They're privileged to have you there. God placed you there. There's no missions organization that's able to plant somebody in there. That's your job. And so carry yourself with the dignity of somebody who's royal and who's been placed there for a reason.
Yeah. And I think those are great points. I will say, however, as an extrovert and a person who is always like wondering why some people say, oh, I just keep my work life and my personal life separate, which I hate. I just want to say, I would also, however, recommend that you become the person that is known in the office for being a person of kindness, of integrity, of giving credit where it's due, and of being about something other than your job. I think that'll go a long way as well. So the person that's just like, oh, I'm so awesome. I just come here and the company just so needs me. And then I'm going to go home and not, you know, I have this secret life that no one knows about. That's not helpful. I mean, as a Christian, especially, I think we should be that person who's just doing things above board, having integrity, caring about the people around us. But as you said, Joshua, not doing it in a fakey fakester way where we're just like, oh, let me see how many friends I can get and way overextend myself and not keep promises and all kinds of stuff. That's nutty. And doing, as Joshua said, doing a great job is the best way to show that you're a good employee and that you're someone who's doing their work as unto the Lord. So good
point.
Well,
Lisa, listen, I want to throw something else in there. Look, I'm an extrovert too, as you know. And the thing that I would be careful about to our extroverts that are listening is, look, being friendly is one thing. Oversharing is another. That is a way to make people be like kind of creeped out. You know, this is not the place where you, you know, sit down with a coworker and like share all of your issues, or this is what happened to my previous job when they almost let me go. That's something you share when you got a really good friend in the workplace. But just be aware.
Nor on the flip side of that, do you have to become the office counselor or a psychotherapist and be everyone's listening ear and get into all their divorces and their personal issues and stuff like that. So so I think that's a good point. Yeah, oversharing on either side of the issue, oversharing, over-listening too much. So great points, Joshua. Thanks. Folks, you can find more of Joshua's writing and what he's about at joshuarogers.com. Of course, you can head over to boundless.org and comment on this show over on the blog, and make sure you are sharing the shows with your friends, especially now as we are in a new year and, you know, folks are kind of looking for something new in their life. So tell them about The Boundless Show. We will see you around next week. I'm Lisa Anderson for The Boundless Show.
The Boundless Show is a production of boundless.org. Focus on the family.